to Calliope's Corner. I'm Paula Kersey, and you are at the place where poets and songwriters meet on 88.7 FM, Radio Hofstra University, and WRHU.org. I'm here today to interview Monk Walter E. Harris III. He writes, edits, and is a small press publisher. He is a resident and poet, an essay contributed to AxisOfLogic.com. He teaches creative writing, haiku, brush, calligraphy, balancing Eastern and Western traditions, and self-identity, the art of Tantra. He's the author and editor of 15 books and has helped produce over 70. Monk also hosts the monthly Performance Poets Association reading at the Sachem Library in Holbrook and the Locust Valley Library Poetry Series. He hosts a podcast, Between the Lines, and has a blog, Scribe Vibe, along with keeping up with the worldwide trends and spiritual traditions, and talking with friends. Monk enjoys music, meditation, munchies, and more. And the more that we're going to be talking about today is his book, A Poetic Nonfiction Musings with the Golden Sparrow. Hello, Monk.
Hello, Paula. Thanks for the intro, and it's good to be on the show again. I think it's been like 12 years or something. I don't quite remember, but a tip of the hat that you're still doing the show. It's wonderful.
I thank you, and I still have one of your sweepers where you introduce Calliope's Corner for our listeners, and I use it often, so thank you.
Oh, my gosh. I forgot that one.
Yeah, your voice is still heard on WRQ. In the book, Musings with the Golden Sparrow. It starts with a traveler hanging out in a cafe. Can you explain what this cafe is in relation to your book and how it became the location where the traveler began his muse?
Yeah, that's really one of the starting points. There is an actual cafe in Bayport, a lovely little cafe called the Golden Sparrow. When I was there and I saw that the title, and it resonated with me for a variety of reasons. The gist was that in Taoist philosophy, there's this phrase called like being humbly noble. It's like a reminder to people to get above themselves, you know, to be too noble and to have a balance of being humble and noble. So that started the muses, you know, the writings happening. So a good part of the theme of the book is about that. And then the Bayport, there's actually a bay there. That also became a kind of focal point as there's like a brother-sister theme throughout the book with sister Waters and brother Air, and also how we all get along, whether by bloodline or just getting along with people as human beings, as brothers and sisters. So that all kind of became the nutshell of the theme. And it's not a novel, but as I was writing it, I wanted it to have like the feel of a story. Mm-hmm. So it felt like having a cafe, you know, a place that could be like a focal point, as, you know, a lot of sometimes a movie or a novel has that. And so that became the focal point. And a lot of it was written in many cafe coffee places around Long Island. Was sort of like the vibe where I got, you know, a lot of inspiration.
You know, the traveler to me was at times somewhat cynical, mostly cerebral, but somewhat poetic, of course. Spirituality, the philosophy, you know, you originally advertised it as a poetic nonfiction, and I'll get back to asking you about that in a minute, but the book first reads like a memoir, and then once the reader reframes their notion of what to expect, I think it really is a clever history lesson. Political and ecological evidence all weave together, you know, to make a lot of connections and coincidences that kind of rub up against you.
Yeah, like you said, perceptively, it's a bit all over the place, and I tried to kind of, you know, weave it all together. So there's a lot of refrains throughout the book. So, like you said, something at first that may be like, why is he mentioning this and forgetting it? Then, it, you know, typically it gets picked up later. And the rubbing up against, it's like there's many levels to it. There's like in Eastern mysticism or Indian philosophy, the Tantra is sort of how it's a way of life that we all kind of rub off on each other. If you hang out with people, you become a little bit like them. And, you know, married couples say, you know, they complete their own sentences after a while, mm-hmm. that kind of thing, how we affect each other. So that became a thing, and that can be for positive or sometimes, you know, with trauma, as the book deals with both personal and cultural, historical traumas. So that whole theme of things that rub against us in an uncomfortable way and also a pleasant way is also one of the main themes. And then, kind of metaphorically, I tried to weave in the things, you know, whether it's grinding coffee or typing or whatever it is, we have these things that are, you know, hitting against each other throughout our lives, and it's sort of how we respond to all that is a theme, too.
Let me steal a line from one of your poems and reframe it as a question.
Okay.
So, how is it then we always remember the sparrows?
All right. So, yeah, it's fun. It's fun to have something bounced back at me that way. It was just, it's sort of like a Zen koan, because as the writing was happening, I was thinking about looking at history and thinking about all these incidences of people not getting along with each other. And then in personal lives, too, everybody, you know, has their challenges with certain people. But then when I was reflecting about all the travels in my life and places I've been, and it just seemed like, wow, everywhere I've ever been, I've seen sparrows. So it kind of, it made me think in a sort of questioning way, like, how is it that we recognize, like, I guess it's sort of like being a voice of nature and of the wisdom of nature, that, you know, we look out and we see a tree, we recognize it, we see a bird, we recognize it, but, you know, what is that? Why do we recognize that, but we still have so much trouble getting along, as, you know, interacting with people sometimes?
So that one thing, in this case, the sparrow, gives us a sense of place, a sense of awareness of where we are and where we exist.
Yeah, that also, to get back to the title and the humbly noble, it's because the sparrows are so, you know, all over the place, and so many of them, I think they're like, people see them as sort of the humble bird. You barely notice them. It's not like seeing a bright red cardinal or a huge, you know, hawk or something. So that again, the bird is a literal and a metaphor for, you know, that humbleness. And the gold is sort of like the pinnacle of things. In a mystical way, the gold as a philosophy is like a philosopher's stone, is the achievement of one's awareness, whereas that's contrast with the worldly material gold. So
you make a lot of references also in Musing with the Golden Sparrow about how birds are daily reminders of how heaven and earth conjoin, and birds carry all kinds of medicine. So I thought that was a great quote from the book to try to, for me anyway, it really clued me in as to why you chose the sparrow.
Yeah, I guess maybe as kids, people have remembered dreams of flying, and so in some way there's that connection. A lot of times we see archangels or angels with wings, so there's this kind of heaven and earth thing going on, and then there's these little birds that are, you know, reminding us that, you know, we with our awareness, our consciousness, and even if not physically, at least in our minds, sometimes we can, you know, we can fly like that, or in our dreams.
Can you share a poem with us about sparrow?
Sure. Yeah, here's a little section. And you know, as you, I don't know if you mentioned, but you noticed it when you told me after you read the book that some of the sections are actually typewritten, because I'd sort of mysteriously been given a typewriter, and that became part of the book as well. Not all of it, just little sections. So here it is. Golden sparrows blending in with the scene, too numerous to mention or wanting mention, yet to be cared for, fed, and given waters, said hello to, sung to, letting them know you are aware of and respect their presences. See them as equally significant. Recognize their level of participation with the cosmic glue. How the light beings, that's the sun, how the light beings, brother winds, sister waters, mother earth, guide their days and nights. How they commune, reminding us of what is most important, most natural.
Those of you that are joining us, we are at Calliope's Corner. We're at 88.7 FM, Radio Hofstra University, and WRHU.org. And we are chatting with Monk, the author of Musings with the Golden Sparrow. So, Monk, your book, to me, is not so much really a book of poems, but truly a book of revelation, you know, pertaining to your ecological I'm going to say, psychological and political research. Even you as the author publisher, you called it a gender-bending poetic nonfiction. So how do you describe that genre?
That's a good question. I actually, a friend had asked me to describe what the book was about, which is sometimes very challenging while writing it. So I went on for about a page or so, and she said, oh, it sounds like creative nonfiction. So I wasn't sure what that was, so I looked it up, and I said, yeah, that sounds like it, creative nonfiction. But then I thought about it, and because I write a lot of poetry as well, it tends to be, you know, poetry even when I'm writing prose. So I just decided to change it to poetic nonfiction. And then genre bending was kind of, you know, coming up with a little bit of a salesy line, but also I wanted to kind of cue the reader in that it's not going to be the typical read. So that the to me, the genre bending is that it's not nonfiction and it's not poetry. It has a kind of stream of consciousness flow to it, and so sometimes it can sound poetic, and then other times there's a fair amount of quotes and research, as you mentioned, about world events and history. So that's more the nonfiction, and the part I just read about the bird, that's sort of more the poetic. So there's a blend throughout.
I picked a piece off of page 173, and I felt it explained the answer to the question. Could you read it for us?
A well-told story has a good ending. A downing of the liquid from an hourglass. A storm window shut before the cold season. A plate shattering on a kitchen floor. A rose, a morning glory, a heart opening to the light beings. This is not a story per se, so the musings showed this brother the image of the ellipsis and whispered not to try and write an ending, just let it trail off, truly trail on. Art imitating life which doesn't end ever. When the body goes, the life goes on. As when this book has been read and the covers closed, still the contents lingers on, having been open and sharing. A book is always open, a blank slate, a Zen garden suddenly walked through by birds. And so the footprints impressed with the page, like the metal keys impressed upon the ribbon upon the blank page. Like a comedian, spirit loves to do impressions. Look at us, the coffee beans ground and pressed with sister waters, the blank pages pressed with bird footprints, a bird walking through the pages, simply en route, with a story to tell, the story, the tracks left. The tracks, a recording, courting that one can ride again, listen to again. Brother and sister united, brother wind speaking with sister waters, the breath of words rippling the waters, a toast, and the golden sparrow lifting into the light being air, buoyed with brother wind to have a talk with father sky, yet ever ready to land again with mother earth and sing the tree of life.
And here again, you reflect on the Native nation spirituality. Each of the book channels that, channels also some Eastern philosophy.
Right.
And then you also get into some geopolitics. Let's talk about that for a quick minute. How does that relate to the Native nation spirituality? And maybe even you also mentioned in the book somewhere about all the relations or all my relations. Pull that together for us.
Okay, that's a lot. Let's see. One of the cores of Native, Native way of lifestyle philosophy, whatever that's called, is called all my relations or all our relations. And it's a way, as I've learned from Native people and reading, it's a way of respecting Mother Earth as a living being and treating every being, whether it's an ant, a mountain, the air, as a relation, as something to be respected, like you would, you know, your uncle, your aunt. That ties in with geopolitics, because a lot of what's going on in the world is destruction in the environment, and then what's, you know, whether it's trying to get clean water and preserve the rivers, the air. So I feel strongly that's a real key to advancing people's awareness and how to treat each other and all the relations. And then from the story point of view, because because of being in this country or living in this country that some people call America, United States, whatever, the history is of, you know, Native people goes back thousands and thousands of years. So I feel obliged to express a respect for the land itself, which has so much history that is beyond just the sort of country history. It's hard to label like a mythology because it's really part of the way of being with the world. But it sounds to me a little bit like mythology to start saying, you know, brother wind and sister waters and things like that. But it helps me experience the world differently, and I hope other people as well.
I also want to make a comment. What you're talking mm-hmm. about is very relevant because even today we have the Dakota pipeline concerns mm-hmm. and the safety of the water on the lands. So what you are talking about is very relevant even today. So those people that may be thinking that you're talking about quote-unquote ancient beliefs, they're not.
Exactly. Yeah, and the whole Standing Rock and the Dakota Pipeline, that's all helping to raise awareness. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole sort of corporate greed that sees, you know, some of the slogans are like, you can't drink oil. You know, it sounds so obvious, but the way the system is set up, it's you know, a lot of the system runs on oil. So it's a complicated topic to how we change our lifestyle and our system. But I think that, you know, Native people especially are reminding us and highlighting that, you know, without clean water, without clean air, you know, how can we exist?
On page 31 and 32 in Musings with the Golden Sparrow, you explain a little bit about the concept of truth, fear, awe, and respect. And I found it fascinating. Can you explain your concept there and maybe read a little bit from those pages?
Yeah, I guess a lot of the book I was thinking about topics and then just kind of, you know, stream of consciousness, a kind of combination. So I was looking at in my own life personally and just in the world and trying to assess, okay, what is it that, you know, what is all this fear about, and why you know, we have this label like global war on terror, and it just seems like it's such a thing nowadays, this awareness to deal with terror and fear. So, and I was looking at personal experiences, like what is scary, and it seems like the whole relation to, say, you could call it spirit or God or however one calls it, but it's like some kind of spiritual experience that is scary, I think, because we've been trained to think of it that way. And so I was trying to put in to say that it I use the words fear, awe, and respect, that it's kind of a mix of, you know, if you're afraid of something, even if I was thinking today how even if say it was like a ball of light appears in your, you know, in your room or something, that would be scary at some level, but it could be like this beautiful thing that's trying to communicate with you. But we get trained to think of those things as otherworldly, and so I think that's where the fear comes from. And so I was trying to say that those things that we think that are far away or otherworldly are actually part of, you know, part of our lives and things we can learn to relate with. I don't know if that answers the gist of the question.
Yes, and you do have a poem, O Fearless Sparrow. Maybe you can read that for us.
Okay, yeah, that's a short little bit here. Oh, fearless sparrows darting through alleyways, town dumps, coastal beaches, yet respectful, in awe, fearful of the other taller two-legged, even though we feed them, and sometimes we can be close. just, you know, birds is go up to them sometimes and they just dart away, and it's sort of amusing, but it made me think, wow, they're, you know, at some level, because we're different, we're similar, but we're so different that they have a certain, you know, I'm just presuming, but it's a certain level of fear or awe or respect of this, you know, human being walking, but they also know they're being fed, so it's an interesting mix.
You're at Calliope's Corner. I'm Paula Kersey, and we are at the place where poets and songwriters meet. We're here with Monk, the author of Musing with the Golden Sparrow, and he's taking us on a little bit of a journey filtered through the eyes of a traveler who is touched by Eastern philosophies and Native nation spirituality, and also touched by poets. So, Monk, my question next is, particularly when speaking about some of these topics that you've weaved into this book, you refer often to John Trudell, you've referred to Dylan Thomas, Mark Twain, Shakespeare, Ginsberg. How and or why was it so important for you to reflect and interject these poets into your work?
I know, Paula, you're a poet as well, and you appreciate poetry, and your show has focused on that. Writers, poets especially, start reading other people or listening to other people, and so those are part of the inspiration for one's own writings. And then sometimes poets are able to, or certain speakers like John Trudell, and he's a poet as well. They can sum up something so well that why bother to say it in oneself? I like to quote. The book is kind of a hodgepodge of just throwing in whatever came to mind as pertinent to the topic, and so a lot of times the poets, because of the ability to sum things up, that became the here, read this, and also to show that to kind of along the lines of the musings, where these ideas and poeticness or whatever comes from, that it's kind of coming from the same source. So whether it's a voice from hundreds of years ago from Shakespeare or whoever, that they're all throughout history, there's these words and especially poetry, which stirs emotions a lot more than other writings, that they're kind of these guidelines to help us remember what we're doing.
I think it's clear if a reader sticks with your book, they will get the message. And for me, it was how everything is intertwined. You did bring in some of these poets and you said things that were perfectly suited to support what you were saying. You're not the only one saying these things.
Right.
In fact, it wasn't only just your conjecture. It was also some facts and also some other people's statements that supported your philosophy, which I thought was so well done.
Well, thank you.
So if anyone wants to read this book, stick with it, because it really does show how very intelligent you are.
Well, I gotta be humble with your compliment, yes. As my book tells me to be. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's sometimes a challenge to to read a lot and to get ideas, and it's sometimes it's like managing a team in my head or in my heart or as in the writing, because there's so many ideas that I get excited about and how to kind of synthesize it and pick the best ones. So it's challenging, but it's also very rewarding, and it's also a lot of other speakers and writers shape. I think we get affected by different people that shape our way of thinking. So it's like it's an ongoing process, and I'm actually working on my next book and trying not to quote so much, so to be a little bit of a different voice, because I think as much as I love quoting, and it like you said, it gives.
We are going to have to close out soon to Calliope's Corner, so I want to make sure we get a summary of what's happening here. And I did note that there was a really nice paragraph, page 80, which says, if you get nothing else. Could you share that with us?
Yes, let's see. Okay, yeah, actually I read another book where somebody, actually a book called Original Thinking, and he was talking, at one point he said, like, this is the thing to get out of this book. So I thought, well, that's a good idea, so I'll use that one. If you get nothing else, get that there is a place where you're at, or if place you need to find, where portals open up, down, within, to visions, dreams, clair olfactory, a front row seat at the cosmic green screen, rubbing elbows with spirit beings. You could lose your sense of direction there, because there is even more to this world than the true news, a place of attention to connect with original roots, and then from tracking where you've been, see better where you're at and where to go from here. Yet always a little going nowhere, because you are cleaning yourself house wherever you go, aiming to be one of the already arrived, smiling without having to go anywhere. So while outer manifestations help the way you measure yourself, it is with the light that your self-house can emit shine, sometimes in the darkest of night, seeing the true measure of that light, unscaring yourself, a wood duck jumping into a river of light.
I find it really interesting that you pinned the term true news when in the most recent news, we now have this concept of fake news.
Yes, it is sort of entertaining, a little scary, but also entertaining.
In place of attention, we talked about that really in the beginning of the show, about how you even found your way towards writing Musing with the Golden Sparrow. What do you mean, though, by wood ducks jumping into a river of light?
It's something I had seen, 20 years ago on TV, and it just made such an impression. Little wood ducks being born in a nest, and then they're like, the nest is above a river, and I had to look up the exact information, but it's quite a ways up in the one I saw. And as instead of, you know, like a regular bird getting out and flying, they get kicked out of the nest, or, you know, pushed out of the nest, and they drop way down and they land in the water and they start swimming. And it made such an impression on me as how sometimes you just have to, you know, go for it. And also the amazement of nature to just be born and then immediately, you know, literally dive into it and start swimming. It shows some kind of deep intelligence to be able to do that without, you know, kicking. It's maybe some kick and scream, but it seemed like overall they just go right at it, and then they become a wood duck like that.
So, Monk, what's next for you, and how can someone find this book? How someone find you if they should want to contact All Book Books, your publishing company?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Paula. Let's see, I have a website, which is the best place to, get the book from. It's allbook-books.com. That's tricky, so I'll spell it. It's allbook-books.com. And I'll even get out my phone number, since the website, sometimes people mess it up. In case anybody wants to order or talk to me, it's 631-716-1385. And you know, I have my emails at the website as well. The book is the first of four books, is what the muses told me. So I just kind of go along with that. And the next one already working on is called Photo Albums of the Heart Mind. So it's going to be some little bit similar themes, but in many ways a lot different.
And those of you that love to get out and read, don't forget to go visit Monk at his Performance Poets Association open mic at the Sachem Library in Holbrook and the Locust Valley Library Poetry Series. Your podcast is also Between the Lines, and he also has a blog, Scribe Vibe. Monk, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Paula, and also just, you know, you probably mentioned it throughout your years of the show, but the Calliope, you know, is the sort of guide of all the muses, so it's a wonderful reminder to people where inspiration can come from.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. All right, take care, Paula.
Bye for now.
WRHU-FM is underwritten in part by Plycon Transportation Group.